Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the JR Sport Brief Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. I told you she would be joining, and on the line we have a journalist, a producer, a writer for The Atlantic. She hosts the new Stick to Sports show with Carrie Champion on Vice TV. And she also hosts Jemele Hill is Unbothered. It's her podcast on Spotify. It's no one other than Jemele Hill. Jemele, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
No doubt about it. It's been a minute. How are you feeling with everything going on in the world?
Tired is probably the best way to describe it. I imagine I'm not alone in that. But it's a lot to take in because as much as we are having some very serious and necessary and long overdue conversations about race and policing, just in general, what we want our society to look like, and more importantly, what kind of integrity we want to have as a nation. We're also in the middle of a pandemic. I know it's probably fashionable these days to act as if we're not or to pretend we're not, but, you know, that's a very real part of everything we're going through. So exhausted in a lot of ways, excited in some others, but, you know, as one of my friends at ESPN used to say, I'm day to day.
That's the best we can be, day to day. I find it interesting you bring up the part where people are ignoring that we're in a pandemic. People are ignoring a whole hell of a lot of things. One thing I think folks shouldn't ignore, and ironically, is the new show you have with Carrie Champion, Stick to Sports. It's ironic because it's not a sports show. Can you break that down?
Yeah, you use the proper word. It is ironic. You know, the reality is that we chose that title as kind of a bit of a middle finger folks that wanted us to not pretend, or wanted us to pretend, rather, that sports and politics, race, gender, culture, that all these things were not mixed and mashed together. And it's a long history showing they obviously are. So a lot of people, when Colin Kaepernick started protesting, when athletes started to become more vocal to things happening in this country, they kind of resented them and told them to stick to sports. And I used to get that a lot whenever I would discuss these issues, and so did Carrie. And so we thought this was a pretty appropriate middle finger to all the people who wanted us to stick to sports. And it's our way of reminding them they didn't win that argument, because you couldn't stick to sports right now if you tried your hardest. It would be literally impossible.
Jemele Hill is on the line with us. Jemele, you talk about Colin Kaepernick and everything that took place in 2017. Your profile went from being in a sports circle, and it went to a national level when you called the president a white supremacist. Between then and now, and how you've utilized your platform and how you haven't backed down, have your goals changed as a journalist from 2017 prior to that, even up until now?
I wouldn't limit it to my goals changing as a journalist. I mean, I think I would say I just changed as a person, you know, period. And I became even more dedicated to the things that are important to me, gave a higher priority to autonomy, creativity, ownership, those kinds of things. And I think a lot of us have realized, and you yourself are a great example of this, is that sometimes the best weapon we have is putting ourselves in a position where we can control our own narrative. And that's what I've tried to do consistently since that, on top of, you know, amplifying other Black people, Black women in particular, is, you know, there was a dearth where we needed to be heard. And to some degree, I think we thought maybe our best solution was to be quieter about that. But now I think we've all kind of turned things up a notch and realized that we're tired of asking, we're demanding. And if it goes beyond the demand where it becomes insistence, or we're just simply taking what we feel like we are owed and what we've earned, that's okay too. That all goes in line with that. So it was just more than about my growth as a journalist, which I feel like has been tremendous during that time. It was about just my overall growth as a person.
Jemele Hill is on the line with us. Jemele, you said a key word that I think is real important here. You said and used the word ownership. How important is it for minorities, and not just Black folks, but minorities to own the stories that they tell and share here in the United States? At one point in time, almost 15 years ago, you were the only Black female columnist covering sports here in the country. Right now, and this is what I sent with you and you shared last week, I'm the only solo Black host male here in the country. And how important is that ownership?
I mean, it's very important, because as we see, there is a decided interest or some kind of willful ignorance where we are often locked out of these mainstream positions. And, you know, to slightly correct you, is like I wasn't just the only Black female sports columnist at a daily newspaper in America. I'm only one in North America. So that was one out of 405. And I don't even want to look to see what that number might be now, but I guarantee you it probably is equal or maybe none. And those statistics, while there's certainly things that kind of highlight you've been able to overcome and what you've been able to accomplish and the uniqueness and specialness of that, it's also really embarrassing that in 2020 that you're the only male sports radio host that's full-time in the country. That's embarrassing. That's a horrible indictment on our industry, because, you know, despite what people may think, is that, you know, there are a lot of people of color who are interested in these kind of positions. And what happens is when they see only one of us or they see none of us, they get discouraged, or they realize that even when they're in it, that those opportunities and that access isn't available to them as it is to some other people. They aren't groomed the same way. They aren't nurtured the same way. They aren't given the same opportunities as everybody else. So it's not just a matter of better. And I've said to myself many times, even when I was the only one as a sports columnist, I wasn't the brightest person ever. I wasn't the best writer of all time. I know that what I represented is just that sliver of us that was able to get through those barriers, because I'm sure for every one of me, there were hundreds, dozens of others that were never able to get to that point because they got discouraged, or their path was redirected along the way, or their dream was simply killed because they didn't see themselves and what they wanted to do. And so I just think that representation, it matters, not because it's charity, which is an insult to even think.
Yes.
It matters because it's a true reflection of what our society is. White people do not have the monopoly of being the only ones who could talk about sports. So when you're talking about discussing leagues where you have leagues that are 70% Black, 80% Black, you need to have newsrooms, sports radio stations, all media, sports media, that reflects what you're actually covering. And so I think I speak for most of us who have been in this game for a while to say that when you have that kind of representation, it changes the coverage. It gives the coverage more breadth and more texture, more context, because then maybe you don't get stories or narratives like Colin Kaepernick was meaning to disrespect the flag. Maybe you don't get those narratives when you actually have a true representative media that is able to understand the conditions he was protesting against.
We're chatting it up with Jemele Hill. Jemele, I got a whole bunch more questions. I got to ask you this one. What advice would you give someone today entering into the sports journalism field, regardless of what they look like?
Well, what I would say is that you got to let the work speak for itself. One of the questions that I often get from younger journalists, and I don't know if you get the same, is they want to know how to build a brand.
Yes.
I hate that question.
I do. I get it a lot.
I can't stand that question.
I do.
Yes, exactly. It's you have built a brand because of your work. You didn't set out to say, like, here's what I want my brand to be. That seems like such a false and fake kind of narrow way of looking at it. A brand implies you're being disingenuous and that you're creating an image that you hope people will like in the hopes of success. But your brand is your work. I mean, and you can't have a brand without a product. So work on the product. And, you know, for me, before I even got to ESPN, I mean, I was in sports and newspapers for almost a decade. I mean, I covered 2 Olympics, covered, you know, multiple NBA finals, college football, college basketball. I mean, I covered some of everything. And I'd gone through the day-to-day grind of covering a team and covering a league. Like, I'd done all of that. So when I got to ESPN, it was just an expansion of the foundation I had already built. So it's got to be about the work. You know, Adam Schefter is Adam Schefter because he breaks stories. You know, he didn't invent the character Adam Schefter. He became Adam Schefter because of his dogged reporting. And so I always try to tell young people, stop worried about being famous, which is kind of a crazy thing to say, because when I got into journalism, nobody thought they would be famous and nobody thought they'd make money. But don't worry about being famous. Don't worry about being seen. Worry about the work that you do and make that your currency as you move about in this industry.
I love it. You got to let the work speak for itself. When you talk about the era that we're in and the timing that we're sitting in here in 2020, I don't think we've seen this much rally about tangible change dating back to prior when I was alive. I'm talking about the 60s and then going into the 70s. What do you see or feel now that might be different?
Well, I think that it feels a little bit more like all hands are on deck. You know, the beauty of when the NBA players decided to strike or had a work stoppage was that they weren't the only ones. It started with the Milwaukee Bucks, and then suddenly all the teams made a collective decision that they weren't going to play either. And then it crossed over to Major League Soccer, Major League Baseball, tennis. The fact that it was so many athletes across the sports world who were invested in seeing us end the disease that is racism, seeing a collective statement be made about what exactly we stand for in this country, it was historic and extremely significant. I think, when you talk about the 60s, that's not to say there were not white allies then. There were. But what you notice is that with the athletes, there were black faces that were leading this charge, and it was only them. The infamous summit meeting, there wasn't no white people there. So it's a lot different, I think, in that regard, in that you have people from cross cultures who are willing to pitch in on this fight. I mean, I think it's pretty much been proven historically. We're only going to get so far in ending systemic racism and oppression if the fight is only left to the people who are most burdened by the problem. It's never going to work. It's never going to end if that's the case. So we need everybody to be collectively invested in seeing this change happen, even if it's painful, even if it causes discord, even if it makes us have to take a reflective look at who we actually are. We have to all be invested or it's not going to work. So I think that is probably the difference I see in this time now. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Rodney King. I'm old enough to remember O.J. Simpson, other times where there have been a stampede of racial conversations. But this one feels a lot different than those did.
We're chatting it up with Jemele Hill. She's on the line with us. She has a new show, Stick to Sports, with Carrie Champion on Vice TV. Jemele, I have to entertain quite a few conversations here on air with callers who want me to stick to sports, who want athletes to stick to sports. What would you say to folks who think sports is isolated from the rest of society's ills?
Well, I would say if they really think about it and, you know, have an honest moment with themselves, they would probably admit that the reason that they want you to stick to sports is because they have the luxury of existing in a vacuum where that's all they can care about or that's all that, that matters to them. And sometimes it just boils down to the fact that they don't agree with being what's said. I mean, when ESPN launched the Jimmy V Foundation, nobody told ESPN to stick to sports. You know why? Because we can all agree that cancer is awful. But what you find when athletes, especially black athletes, are speaking up about racial injustice, it's always a debate. Why are we still debating racism? You're either for it or you're against it. It's pretty simple. So I think some of those people who want you and me to stick to sports, it's about the what's being said. And that's really more bothersome because they don't want to be reminded. Look, I'd love to wake up and act like I wasn't black or not be black for a moment and not experience some of the emotions I've experienced for the last 3 or 4 months, but I don't get that luxury. And we have to stop pretending that sports is happening on one side of the planet and everything else has happened on the other side. It's never been that way. And a lot of times sports has been the driver of change before everything else. Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball in 1947. The Civil Rights Act wasn't passed until the mid-60s.
Yeah.
He came almost 20 years before his time. So had that been the attitude, then that never happened. That doesn't drag society along with it. A lot of times sports, through these conversations, tells people what's possible. It gives them hope to see that you have athletes from across several different sports banding together to fight racism. That should give you hope. You should be encouraged by seeing that. And it should make you want to make some changes and be more dedicated in your own life. And, you know, not to mention, if you've ever walked into an arena or a stadium, paid for a ticket, you instantly made sports political. Because I tell you what doesn't happen. When owners need new stadiums and they need new arenas and need new facilities, who do they come to? The taxpayers. So sports is automatically political just by you consuming it. So, you know, I think people just like to pick and choose whatever makes them comfortable. And I'm glad that sports is making a lot of people uncomfortable. You know, most of us, we love to be able to watch a game and not think about some things that are happening in our country, but we don't get that luxury to do so. And we got to be okay with sitting in that kind of discomfort.
We're chatting it up with Jamel Hill on the line. I can certainly tell you there's been plenty of times I have simply stepped outside my door and been uncomfortable for minding my own damn business. I got to ask you as well, Jamel, when you think about some of the actions that have been taken, whether it's the Bucks, whether it's Colin from several years ago, what are your thoughts on the push forward to management and people that have more influence, especially financially, with some of the changes they might be kind of nudged into implementing?
Well, that's where I would like to see this shift. And the athletes have certainly done a great job of voicing their concerns, of keeping these issues front and center. But, you know, the people who will be able to create a lot of the change that we need to see are the people that employ them. It's a lot of the owners, it's a lot of the sports commissioners. They can apply a different kind of pressure than the athletes do. You know, many of them, as it is, donate to political campaigns, and they do so with the hope of having influence. Well, if you want to make sure that money is well spent, why not use it to influence some of these politicians about these issues that your players clearly care about and that affect them and people that look like them? It's just a natural progression of things, I think. So, you know, the athletes can take this only so far, but at some point, the power structure has got to be invested in breaking down and dismantling the system. So I hope that while, you know, you saw all these different teams, you know, they all put out these beautiful statements about Black Lives Mattering, about being committed to racism. I like to see them take it from a statement to action, and we'll see what they're really about. You know, if they really do mean the words that they say, because they've given people a document to hold them accountable. And I think really this is the only way that we're going to take this conversation beyond the place where it's always been.
Well, Jamel, even today, unfortunately, in the news, I saw something that is a double standard, as the president is even coming and saying, on one hand, stick to sports, let's keep politics out of sports. But on the other hand, he's over here trying to really push forward towards the start of a Big Ten season, while at this point ignoring the Pac-12 on the West. I mean, we know that these instances of a double standard exist, and I'm glad that you basically brought that up. People pick and choose.
Yeah, they do. I mean, he has said many times how sports should stay political, but has no problem inserting himself in sports as long as it plays to his benefit. It was just a few years ago that he continued to evoke the name of Colin Kaepernick because he knew it played well with his audience. And it was a political talking point for him at a time where most people in the country were against Colin Kaepernick. That opinion has shifted slightly because they see that how wrong they were in not supporting him. But he's going to continue to use sports as his personal, you know, campaign platform. And it's pretty obvious why he picked the Big Ten. The Big Ten represents a lot of swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. These are all states that are very key in an election because of the number of electoral votes. And pretty much you do the math, you know, if you win Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, you pretty much win the election. So he knows that. And so he's dangling a carrot in front of the Big Ten by saying, hey, we'll help you out and have football return. And I hope people see through this, is that this is not only just about personal political gain. This is also about the fact that football would be here if our government would have had a more comprehensive and competent response to the virus in the first place. And they didn't. And now that football season is upon us and people are angry and mad and they want to see football, now they're trying to backpedal and decide that they suddenly want to come up with a response. And realize that response isn't for everybody. You know, the one thing that is, you know, universally true is we all pay taxes. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, where's our response? Where's our rapid testing, right? Is it just for college football players because it helps you win your political campaign, potentially? I think that's what is the message that's being communicated because, you know, unfortunately, we've arrived at such a low point in our political atmosphere that we have some people, unfortunately our president, who's not interested in governing all of us. He's only interested in governing the people who can help him stay in power, and that's it. And to me, to see him say that about the Big Ten, and oh, by the way, as most of the reports have said since, is that that is far-fetched, yeah, what he's proposing. And just to see that message communicated, it was really pretty you know, I'm trying to think of a non-cuss word, but it was really pretty messed up.
Now we know that. We're chatting it up with Jamel Hill. I got a couple more questions for you, Jamel. When it comes down to Colin, you mentioned him as it relates to the president, and we know that he has certainly lobbed stings and shots towards you. But we know Colin, he has a deal with Disney and ESPN to produce a docuseries. I know that you're going to be participating with that. How did that come together?
It came together very surprisingly and very organically. Colin and I had a conversation just about my time at ESPN. And, you know, this is what speaks to really his integrity. I mean, he wanted to know the autopsy of what happened, and partly because he wanted to make sure that he didn't create a business relationship with somebody that had harmed another black person. And I thought I was very humbled by that. Colin Kaepernick does not need my approval in any regard. Had he never called me, I still would not have lost any respect for him. But nevertheless, he did. And when we had that conversation, I was honest, but I was fair. And I thought that the Disney and ESPN platforms presented him with a very unique and powerful opportunity to tell his story in the way that it deserved to be told, to make it a true historical record. So as we were talking, we kind of ended our conversation, and then he called me back a few hours later and said, you know, I thought of a great way to make this work. Why don't you just come on as a producer? And, you know, he said he felt, you know, very comfortable with that arrangement and, you know, would like to not only lean on me as a journalist, but also given how well I know, you know, Disney and ESPN, who he's now in business with. So to me, it was just a very easy decision to make. I know people look at kind of my awkward parting for ESPN and wonder why I would have decided to work with them again. But while things may have been pretty tumultuous my last couple of years there, it was not at the level where I felt like my relationships were destroyed. The relationships I cared about are perfectly intact. And, you know, it was an awkward parting. It was still an amicable parting. And, you know, I knew that this was too good of an opportunity for me to let any residual awkwardness influence my decision not to do it. As a journalist, you want to be, you sort of live for the moment where you can play a little bit of a historian, because you think about how people will 20 or 30 years from now look back on this time or look back on the story and how they might view it. And if you can play a hand in his story being viewed in the proper context, that's just very difficult to pass up.
Well, Jamel, I think even in your own right, you said you have changed as a person. And I don't know how many years I've known you. I don't remember how many years ago I met you, but you've always been an amazing person to me. And it's been amazing to see you not back down. And I just commend you for what you've been doing, what you started doing, and everything else that's going to be in front of you. What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I've been asked that question a few times, and I'm always a little kind of discombobulated about how to answer it. But I think, that the way I want to be remembered is to be remembered as a servant, to be honest. And I don't mean that in a way of being beneath anybody, but just in a way of, I've been able to accomplish a lot in my career. I've been very blessed with all the things I've been able to not just accomplish, to see and to do, and the platforms that I've been able to be on and what I've had access to. But as great as all those things are, they really kind of don't mean anything unless I'm able to amplify others. And so at this point in my career, having enjoyed the success that I have, it's important to me that there is another generation of journalists that feels like that they belong, another generation of Black women who feel like that they belong in these spaces. And so it's really important to me to dedicate myself to that. It could be through works. It can certainly be through mentorship, a lot of different ways, even if just by seeing me have a late night show with another Black woman discussing everything but sports, if that is somehow something that sparks something in someone else, then I feel like I've done what I came here to do. So, because I just think about when I was coming up in this business, and one of the biggest differences between, why I made it and some others didn't is because I was blessed enough to have people along the way that helped me feel like I belong. And if not for that sense of belonging, I'm not sure I would have made it this far. And so I try to impart that on to others so that they understand that they belong in this profession too, despite how very harrowing and discouraging the statistics look like with so few of us in this business, with many of us who are in choosing to leave it. I know it's a grim picture, but I do believe it's one that we can change. And so that's only going to happen if I kind of stay in this fight and continue to progress to different platforms and show a model of how we can do this.
Well, Jamel Hill, I will give you some JR wisdom. It's real simple. I'm not going to say it as eloquent as you just laid it out, but keep doing the damn thing and everything else that you've been doing. I think that's good enough.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And I'm really proud of you and just happy that you've been able to succeed. You did things your own way, and you've always been authentic in the years that we've known each other. So you have a lot you certainly can be proud of.
Oh, well, thank you, Jamel. Tell people where they can follow you and watch the new show.
Yeah, we're on Vice Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. There are several years, of course, but they can catch Stick to Sports there. And, of course, I'm on all social media platforms. It's simply at Jamel Hill.
That was Jamel Hill, and you've been listening to the JR Sport Brief Show right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.